How you are in dance is how you are in life. That is one of his favorite quotes. He has choreographed many films, including John Travolta's Staying Alive. He's not only a choreographer, he's a performer, a dancer with over 40 years of experience and Pierce College's own performing arts professor. I'm talking about Denon Rawls, my guest today on Living the Good Life, the only show in the San Fernando Valley that contains no trans fat and is all about the benefits of staying active and eating healthy. Today is Monday, April 24. I am your host, Yadira Gonzalez, and you are listening to KPCRadio.com. Thank you so much, Denon, for being here with us today. How are you?
I am terrific. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Great. Thank you. Now, I want to ask you, how does dancing relate to exercising your body and being healthy?
Well, dance is the ultimate exercise for not just your body, but for your brain. There's been scientific evidence that has come about in the last 15, 20 years that has proven that the physical exercise one does with dance, not just exercise, but the exercise of having to understand, learn, put into practice the basic dance techniques actually smartens up the brain. It fires everything up in there and actually makes you smarter. So not only is it great for the body, it's great for the mind, and it is a great stress reliever.
Great. All right. So let me ask you, how did your passion for dancing begin?
I was a young kid, about 12 years old, as I say in my book, On the Floor, and I didn't have much going on in my life, and my older brother suggested to my mother, why don't you start him in dance classes? So I actually started at a very well-known ballroom studio in Long Beach, California, called the Calls Fine Arts Center. And so I started doing ballroom dancing, and I just took to it. For some reason, it came to me. I could do it. I got myself mentally involved. The teacher said, hey, you're pretty good at this. And, of course, when you're 12 years old, other important things like, the girls seem to like to dance with me. So that's what I did. And I started off as a ballroom dancer. For 5 years, I did that. And I got serious toward the end with a partner. And we did competitions. And we did all the Latin dances. And we did the international dances, waltzes and foxtrots, etc. And I got heavily involved in that before I moved over into the other arts, the other dance forms.
So, and where was this when you started?
I started in Long Beach, California, where I grew up. I was a 12-year-old in what we used to call junior high. You all call middle school today. And I got involved. And as I said, we got into competitions and we were rehearsing on a daily basis and practicing. And then I had an opportunity to switch over into ballet dancing. And that became my primary love at that time.
For how many years did you practice just ballet?
Well, I'm still practicing because I started ballet when I was 16 years old. Mm-hmm. And I started with an instructor who happened to be the sister-in-law with a sister of my older sister's new husband. And she said, you know, you got great turnout. And I said, what's turnout? And she said, well, your legs just naturally open up, your toes point to the side. So she brought me to the Shrine Auditorium to see Nureyev and Fontaine, the great Rudolf Nureyev, and Margot Fonteyn from the Royal Ballet. These were two of the greatest names in ballet at the time. This is with the Royal Ballet. And I was just blown away a couple of nights of watching them dance. And so she took me back to her studio in Tennessee, and Oak Ridge, Tennessee, a little town most people don't know about. And I spent the summer there, and I got my start. And when I came back to go back to school, I continued on with my ballet training. I've never stopped. I continued taking classes all the way through my performing career, and to this day, I do my own ballet workout several times a week just to keep myself into shape. But ballet is one of my primary loves. And it was shortly after that I went into jazz dancing, tap dancing, and all the rest.
Wow. Is ballet a common dance in males?
Well, ballet is not common for anybody, but even less common for males. So if you look at any dance studio in the world, and certainly here in the United States, and certainly in California, if you look at the ballet schools, you'll see 35, 45, 55 young ladies, and I'm talking about your 7, 8, and 9-year-olds just starting out, and then you'll see 1, 2, 3, maybe 4, if you're lucky, boys. And it's a tough one, you know. It's a hard sell on a lot of people because they don't understand the arts in general, and they certainly don't understand dance and something as sophisticated as ballet. So it isn't something that a whole lot of parents would ever think on their own to put their boys into. And but, you know, I got started when I was 16, and I got started because of this woman who saw me and said, I think you have potential. And she took me to see two of the greatest ballet dancers in the world. And it just sort of turned me on, and I got going. And dance has been my career ever since, all the way up through. I have it to thank for everything. I met my wife dancing, and we've continued on to have a great career together and separately.
Great. So is ballet, you said you started at 16 to be interested in that, or was that?
16 in ballet. Mm-hmm. I started off as a ballroom dancer, did 5 years of that, got real serious with that, but I knew that wasn't going to take me there. I had the same idols everybody did at the time. You watch the movies, you see Fred Astaire, you see Gene Kelly, you see other great dancers in the movies, and you go, well, that looks good, you know? So I want to do something. I didn't know how. And fortunately, somebody showed me the way, and I started my ballet training. And I got real serious into that. And even at one time, that's what I was going to do with my life, become a ballet dancer. But I happened to find jazz. And I got to add that jazz element with my ballet training. And that's the sort of thing that took me into my career in films, television, stage productions, nightclubs, etc.
Now, tell me a little bit on that, on your...
Well, I met my wife at a well-known dance studio in the West Los Angeles area in the early 1970s, and she was already on the cover of Dance Magazine. She had appeared, she had the honor of being on the cover of Dance Magazine as a young phenom, as we would call them. She was an amazing Los Angeles-based dancer. The man that we took from, his name was Stephen Peck. He was our mentor. It was the Stephen Peck Dance Company. And in the West LA area, many people knew about it. We met each other there. We got a lot of serious training there. We continued our ballet training, our jazz training. He was the man, even though I had already done some Latin training, he was one of the great Latin dancers of all times. Back in the day when you called it mambo and cha-cha and rumba and tango, he was a great Latin dancer. So my wife and I, we went on from there being in that company. We would audition, and we both had our first television shows in the same year. As a matter of fact, I recount on my book On the Floor by me. Every chapter starts off with a story from one of the television shows or films or stage productions, one of the movie stars we worked with. And the first preface starts off with my experience and what I learned from dancing at this audition for a great choreographer for the 1974 Academy Awards show. He was going to be starring Liza Minnelli, who was at the top of her game at the time. She was a Tony Award winner, an Oscar Award winner. Everybody wanted to work with Liza Minnelli, and she was going to perform on the Academy Awards show. And so the first of four Academy Awards shows I did was for a man named Ron Field. He was a Broadway Tony Award-winning choreographer who was into television and films, and I auditioned for him in that time frame there, got my first job. It was a little scary at the time, but and then my wife did the same thing, and then we worked separately in films and television. We worked together up until the point where we started to choreograph together, and so it just kind of blossomed from there.
And how did you meet her?
Well, she was in the Stephen Peck Jazz Dance Company in West Los Angeles, and they performed all over the place. And as I said, she had already appeared on the cover of Dance Magazine. Oh. A friend of mine from where I was going at the time, Long Beach City College, now Long Beach Community College, said, you know, you need to come up with me. We're going to look at this dance show. So we went into the West LA area. We saw this jazz dance company. I was blown away. I didn't know who she was. My wife, her name is Saber Rawls, what a great dancer. And I just saw her. I was blown away. And then I started taking at this dance studio. I added jazz to my repertoire. I was doing ballet at the time, serious, and I started into the jazz arena, and that's how I met her. I wasn't allowed to dance with her for a good year and a half because she was too good for me. But I apprenticed there, and I worked myself up to a certain point where eventually we started to partner each other, and sparks flew from there, as they say. And before you know it, we were a couple.
So you've danced everything with her, pretty much?
Well, I don't know what you mean by everything with her, but we have done. She's one of the great dancers of all time, and she teaches herself at different places, and together we do all the dances, you know. But we work together as dancers in a lot of different television shows. And then there were shows that she would do, and I would be maybe on the road with a nightclub act. And, you know, we worked together separately. And then finally we actually formed our own dance company. And then we started to choreograph and work with dancers and start performing. And that's how we developed, you know, who we became as choreographers and teachers.
So on the TV shows, you danced, and were you also choreographers of other people?
Well, not for... I worked for other people mm-hmm. for many, many, many years. As I said, the 1974 Academy Awards show was for a man named Ron Field. Now, Ron Field was, as I said, a Tony Award-winning choreographer for the Broadway show Applause. And he was a well-known person, and he held the big audition in this big old studio in Hollywood, California. And as I recount in the book, I went to the audition. I had a pretty cocky attitude. I thought I was pretty good. Mm-hmm. And all throughout the audition, I was, you know, presenting my best self forward. And at one point in time, I saw the choreographer, Ron Field, looking at me. He had kind of an intimidating manner. He was a little scary. Most people thought he was scary, at least until we got to know him. And one time he walked, in the middle of the audition, he walked right over to me, and I thought, wow, I must have done something right. And he began to look right at me, nose to nose, and he began to look extremely annoyed at me. And then he pointed back to one of his assistants who was helping to teach the combinations that we were dancing, and he looked back at me, and then he said, "Now do it like that." And that just made my heart sink because I thought I was dancing my heart out. I was dancing my heart out, but I thought I was doing really good. I thought he might be coming over to me to ask me my name so he could remember me and make sure he hires me for this job. But what I learned there was the first of many lessons that I recount in the book that I wrote, and that is it's not good enough to be good. You need to be smart. And that's what I started teaching my students, and I took that lesson with me. I realized that as good as I wasn't being smart. And smart in this particular case meant I wasn't doing the dance the way the choreographer wanted. See, I have a job. As I tell all my dancers, you have a job, and your job is to make my work work. A professional dancer's job out in the real world, out in the real world, and that is to make the choreographer's work work. That is take their ideas, their concepts, their intentions and bring it to fruition. Make sure it happens. So if I just take what the choreographer gives and gives it my own interpretation, I'm not likely to get hired by him. So I was fortunate. He saw potential. He did hire me first of many times, which is good because that was my livelihood. That's how I made my living. And I learned a lot from him. But the first lesson was, and I, as I put this in the book, under what I call my teaching principles, I call things. I go, here's the thing, and I wrap it up in a box and I say, and this particular thing is, it's not good enough to be good. You need to be smart. And a few chapters later, I go into how it's not good enough to be smart. You need to look smart. And that's why this book here has the reviews it has. I'm so pleased because it really is getting great reviews on Amazon.com because people are realizing it's not about dancing only. That's just my perspective. It really is about education, the arts. It's about learning. It's about becoming the best you can be. So people were asking me years ago, you should write down everything you do, everything you say, because it's good. You should make a book. I go, a book? I'm not an author. I'm a dancer. I'm a choreographer. I'm a teacher. But I started writing down everything that I had, and then it started to come together, and I ended up with this book that basically projects all the principles and theories that Sabre and I have about dancing. The title itself, On the Floor, is very important because we've all heard the expression putting yourself on the line, right? You've heard that?
I've heard that, yes.
Yeah, so when you put yourself on the line, what are you doing? You're really putting yourself into a place of judgment. Now, for the dancer and the singer and the actor, it's actually literal. On the Broadway show, Broadway stage, you go and you audition, you stand on a stage, and they actually put yourself on a line there. And you stand there, and you have to give your name, and you have to tell the directors and the choreographers out there a little bit about yourself. And then you might sing a song, and then you'll do the dance, and then they eliminate from there. Your entire livelihood, your entire life is being judged at that moment. That's putting yourself on the line. But as I say in the book, before you even put yourself on the line with any hopes of success, you got to put yourself on the floor. So the floor is the place of work. A literal place for us dancers. We go on the dance floor. The basketball players go on the court. Football players go on the field. Lawyers and doctors, they go into the classroom and finally into the hospitals. So there's the place of work is where on the floor is. The subtitle, if you don't love this, you just plain don't love dancing. As you can see by the picture on my book, it shows a young lady doing one of the stretches and her leg is being ripped off. Well, that's what it looks like. That's the pain one feels when one works their hardest in a dance class. Now, the problem is that most people find the pain and then they start to wonder, why did I even begin doing this? So they stop. Here's the thing. If you don't love this, if you don't love this, you just plain don't love dancing, happens to be the work. If you don't love the work, don't tell me you want to be a lawyer, but you don't want to go to law school. Don't tell me you want to be a doctor, but you don't want to go to medical school. I want to be an accountant, but I don't like math. So you can't tell me you want to be a dancer, but you don't want to go on the floor every day for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours to put in the work.
Right. It doesn't make sense. So you got to practice, right?
Well, and it's way beyond that. You got to work at a certain. So it's all about the work ethic, but it certainly is about the practicing, because that's what rehearsing means, to do over and over and over and over and over and over again.
All right. Well, what else do you cover in your book? Anything else important that you like
to
mention?
Well, here's the thing. I would like to mention this, because there are three misconceptions about dancing. Everybody has this. And the interesting thing is that the three misconceptions about dancing are the three reasons everybody starts dancing. Everybody starts dancing because they think it's going to be, number one, fun. So they look at the bunch of dancers on stage. They might see a stage production. They might see a musical. They might see a music video. They might see a movie. They might see a Broadway show, a musical somewhere. And everybody says, oh, that looks like fun. And of course, the fun leaves almost immediately upon the first class, because as soon as people start putting in the work, they start bending over, they start stretching, they start kicking, they start doing the floor work, they start jumping. They start doing all the techniques that lead to you becoming a dancer to execute the step. The fun leaves almost immediately. The second misconception about dancing is that it's easy. The reason everyone thinks it's easy is because the professionals who out there are dancing, they make it look easy. Part of their job is to make it look fun and easy. So you see dancers out there on in music videos and Broadway shows, and they're dancing away and they're singing away, and they're even on a ballet stage when they're doing some of the great work that ballet dancers do. Everyone in the audience is thinking, who doesn't know? They're thinking, wow, that looks like they're just having the greatest time of their life. But of course, that negates all the hard work that someone puts in. So when someone says that looks easy, that's their impression, but it's not easy. So what happens is they take their first few classes, they find the fun factor leaves quickly, and then it's not so easy. And the third misconception about dance, for the reason that people start dancing, it looks pain-free. When everyone's on stage, everyone looks like they're having a great time. They're enjoying themselves. They're having fun. It looks easy. And they don't see that when they walk back, a whole lot of dancers are bending over, grabbing their backs. They got their legs wrapped, their calves wrapped, their ankles wrapped. They're going to chiropractors. They're even sometimes on medication to help ease the pain. They have strains, and sometimes dancers will get something, as I've had, where it's knocked you out for 6 months to a year, and you have to work around that. So the three misconceptions about dancing is that it's fun, is that it's easy, and that it's pain-free. Now, here's what I say to people. Well, they say, well, it's no fun, and it isn't easy, and it hurts. Why do I start dancing? Well, this is where a better word comes into play. As I elaborate much more in the book, but too many people rely on fun to do anything. And even to become a great golfer or a great tennis player, you can't become a great anything having fun. You can do everything for fun, but forget about becoming good. The only way you can become good is to put the work in. So the word that I learned to use was the word that came from our mentor, Mr. Stephen Peck, way back in the day, when he said, you got to learn to embrace your struggle or enjoy your struggle. And so the word that I use, that I prefer to use for everybody, is joy. Every time I finished a television show or a stage production, I'd be in Las Vegas performing or with a nightclub act. I just did a movie. Everybody comes up to me and says, oh, that was fun. Did you have fun? Wasn't that fun? Now, I didn't want to burst their delusion that dancing is the most fun, easy, pain-free thing in the world to do, so I never said anything. But I thought in my classes I should start teaching, so I have started teaching. Don't ask me if I had fun. Ask me if I enjoyed myself. Nobody ever asked the surgeon who does a 5-hour operation on somebody's brains, did you have fun? Now, they didn't have any fun, and I don't think I want my brain surgeon having fun while he holds my brains in his hands.
Right.
But if you ask that same doctor, was there a sense of joy in what you did? And of course, he or she would say, absolutely. What I did, very few people can do. And if I can help this person by what I can do to that brain. Nobody ever asked the accountant in the worst part of the accounting season, which we're in right now, if they're having fun. I personally know accountants. They have no fun whatsoever, but they thoroughly enjoy. So the problem with the word fun is that the fun factor generally leaves immediately in everything you start. That's why our beginning classes all over the world have thousands of young people in them, and the advanced classes have three. Why? Because each next level, in order to progress, you have to increase the work level. The ones who make it to the top of that pyramid, who become the great dancers, are the ones who really, really, as I did as a youngster, enjoy it. I never thought dancing was fun. And it's weird because I had to do this. I recount the story in the book. When I was a young teenager, I worked at Disneyland two Christmases in a row, and I did their Fantasy on Parade, their Christmas parade. Mm-hmm. Now, I was just a kid, and I hadn't had a great deal of training just yet. I had the ballroom dancing. I just started a little ballet. And what happened is I got to do the Christmas parade, and I got to be, and there's a picture of me in the book of me dressed in my hippo costume. I got to be one of the hippos from the Fantasia unit, and I was a dancing hippo. Now, as I recount in the book, I had a fabulous fun. It was just a bunch of guys dressed up like all these characters doing the parades. It was hysterical. Most of the fun I had was when people had problems. Whenever it rained, we were told, well, okay, it's a little scary because some of the hills, you know, we would be slipping and sliding. So they'd say, don't do the dance routine. Just walk the parade and wave to all the kids. You know, you want to make the kids feel good. So we would love doing that. We had a great time relating to the kids. But on more than one occasion, I would watch one of my compadres slide down the hill and fall on his back. Now, let me tell you, there is nothing funnier than watching a hippo slide down a ramp and fall on his back. And then on his back, his arms and legs are waving. Now, I'm behind my hippo head in complete hysterics. You can't get funnier than that. It's even more funny the fact that they couldn't get up by themselves. They had to have the monitors. They had the parade monitors, the men and women who were watching, you know, the parades,
right,
and keeping the crowds back. Well, you had to have two or three of them help this poor hippo up. Now, as much fun as I was having, that's not the part I wanted to do. I wanted to be one of the stars of the parade. So I wanted to be, what was the dance stars, was the Mary Poppins unit. They did the chimney sweep dance. They didn't have any hippo costumes on. So I had to make a decision, and here's the decision. I had to decide whether I was going to have nothing but fun or whether I was going to become good enough to work. And I decided that I wanted to become a really, really good dancer and performer. So the day I made that decision was the day the fun went out, but not the joy. I had to get serious, so I started the work. I had to increase the work. I had to work harder than I ever could work, ever worked at anything. And because of that, there was pain, there was injuries, there was blood, literal blood, and there was all kinds of sweat, and even on occasion, tears. But you know what? 3 or 4 or 5 years emerged, and then I started working in films and television and commercials and Broadway shows and different stage productions. And that is the lesson that I try to teach. And it's not fun you want to look for. Look for the joy. You don't think those football players are having fun out there.
Yeah.
They're working. That's their job. But ask them if they enjoy it.
Right. Well, great point and great lesson. Now tell me now a little bit on the classes you currently teach here at Pierce College.
Right now, I have this semester. I have a Latin dance, social dance class, Latin and salsa class, Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Next semester in the fall, after the summer, I'll be doing a Wednesday night Latin class. I want to alert anybody who out there is listening, who's ever been in one of my Latin classes. This is the first semester this coming fall where we're going to have multiple levels. So, in the past, it's just been the one level. Now we're going to have the level one, level two. So that anyone, all the ones who've taken my classes before can come back and sign up, and we're going to have a little bit more advanced section. On Thursday nights, I'm going to do a tap class. It's also a tap one, tap two class. They're both at 7 o'clock in the dance studio in the North Gym, and everybody's welcome to come. So that's my fall schedule. I'm also at three other community colleges, Moor Park College, Cerritos College, Orange Coast College, and often I'm at various and sundry dance studios.
Is it, what about Dance Dimensions? Is that where you also teach?
Dance Dimensions here in Woodland Hills is where my wife is at right now. Oh. She has an adult jazz class on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 9:30 in the morning, and it's for anybody who would like to participate in that. You can go on our website, denonandsaber.com, D-E-N-N-O-N and A-N-D. Saber is a little funny, S-A-Y-H-B-E-R.com. You can connect with us, denonandsaber.com. We have our Facebook page. We have all the photos of a lot of the stars I work with, Ann Margaret, Raquel Welch, Janet Jackson, the great Gregory Hines, one of the great tap dancers of all times, a couple of television specials I did with Baryshnikov, one of the greatest ballet dancers who ever lived. So there's a lot of good information and photos and fun stuff to look at. And you can check out our book on Amazon.com, On the Floor by Denon Rawls, and you can read all about that there.
Great. Now, I wanted to ask you as well, there was an article published on the LA Times about you. Is that right?
Well, there was it was actually for the Orange County area, okay. But it was part of an insert into the LA Times. And because I teach at Orange Coast College in Costa Mesa, Orange County, they did a little thing on me there, which is basically what we're doing here, just highlight some of the things and talk about their schedules over there at Orange Coast College. We have a great schedule here at Pierce College, so anybody wanting to participate in ballet and modern and jazz and tap and Latin can just look at the dance schedule here and please join us.
Great, perfect. Now, what's your favorite part about being a dance instructor?
Just passing on knowledge, just passing on working with all different levels and watching young ones and not so young ones progress and go from not too much to a whole lot more. I always get this question, what's my favorite? Since I teach ballet, I teach jazz, I teach tap. Jazz is really what we're most noted for. But I tell them I love it all, but I tell you what I do love. I love what I'm doing. So when I'm teaching a tap class, that I'm into that. When I'm in the Latin class, we're doing salsa, I'm into that. So I just like seeing people progress and get better.
Great. And what would you say is the hardest dance?
Well, ballet is by far the hardest of all the disciplines. It's something you can't cheat, and it's something you can't learn overnight. It's a long-term investment. That's what I tell everybody. If you really want to make a career of dance, you want to be in ballet class. But you're not going to take a class and 2 weeks later go, ooh, look at me.
Right.
You know, it's a very long-term investment. But because it's a long-term investment, the payoffs are really great.
It's a process, right?
That's a process.
So can people really become great dancers? Or are you actually born with that?
Well, everybody can learn to dance. Everybody can be better. It's like being a musician. You know, can you play a piano? Well, everybody can play a piano, but not everyone's going to be a professional. So it's the same way with dance.
Sounds good. Well, thank you so much, Denon, for being my guest today on Living the Good Life. Remember, guys, his name is Denon Rawls. You can find him at 6100 Topanga Canyon Boulevard in Woodland Hills. To contact him, make sure to check out his website, denonandsaber.com. That's it for today. Thank you all for listening to kpcradio.com. Stay tuned next week for another edition of Living the Good Life. I am your host, Yadira Gonzalez.